and welcome. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Christian Falvey, and this is a special edition marking the independence of Czechoslovakia 94 years ago today. There are more than 2 million Czechs and their Czech-speaking descendants living outside their homeland or working abroad indefinitely. And Czech Radio and the Czech Ministry of Foreign Affairs undertakes a number of activities, largely through Radio Prague, to support those communities, to keep their connections with this country strong, and to help them spread knowledge about the Czech Republic. This year, Czech Radio and Czech Television began a joint project to recognize the work of some of the best-known of those Czechs abroad as part of a week-long festival of expat events held in the last week of September. 20 outstanding individuals were nominated for a survey seeking the greatest Czech abroad, from a pantheon of names including the likes of director Miloš Forman, author Milan Kundera, and sports legends Martina Navratilova and Jaromír Jágr. Three people were chosen by television and radio audiences in the Czech Republic. In today's special program, we will be hearing from each of the winners: former U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, plastic surgeon Bohdan Pomahač, and charity organizer Bjella Gran Jensen. The stories of all three should be an inspiration to immigrants and emigrants everywhere. The third émigré in our survey hardly needs any introduction, though many may forget her Czech origin. Former U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright was born Maria Korbelová in Prague's Smíchov district. Before her second birthday, though, when Hitler invaded the Sudetenland, her family fled to London, where her father, a Czechoslovak diplomat, served as an advisor to the government in exile. More than a dozen members of her Jewish family died in extermination camps. After the war, the Korbel family returned to Czechoslovakia, but again for less than 3 years, before the Communist Party took power in 1948. This time the family received political asylum in the United States, where half a century later their eldest daughter would become the most influential woman in the country. The Czech public's relationship to Madlenka has varied over the years. During her tenure as secretary, most Czechs were proud to claim her as one of their own. Later, she attracted some public ire when then-President Havel suggested her as his successor at an unpopular period for American policy. Still, as our survey shows, Madame Secretary is vastly respected in the Czech Republic, and that treatment is one of the things she says she valued most when we spoke with her. You said that you still feel like you belong here, and so many immigrants in the United States are melded into society. Well, how is it after all these years that you still feel that
everybody's very nice to me here, and I also was kind of literally looking for my roots. I am very proud to be back, and when President Havel became president of Czechoslovakia and then the Czech Republic, he kind of exemplified everything that's good and brilliant about the Czech people, and so I was very happy to come back and really celebrate what happened here after the Velvet Revolution. And so I do feel very comfortable here. I'm an American. Americans are a mixture of everything. But I'm proud to be a Czech American. And so it's very nice to come back. I was telling somebody, when I first came here with President Clinton, and there was a ceremony at the castle, they play, obviously, the Star Spangled Banner, and there's the Land of the Free and the Home of the Brave, and then they play the Czech national anthem, which is Where is My Home? Well, that always brings me to tears because they kind of go together.
When you were a child, you lived in so many different countries. How do you view the issue of cultural identity and nationalism?
Well, I do believe that cultural identity is important. What I don't like is when pride in oneself curdles into hatred of somebody else, then it undermines the whole aspect. And in many ways, it's people have to get over their historic differences and realize that we live in a multi-ethnic world. And what is so brilliant about America is the diversity. And I think, you know, we all have different pasts, but in America we all have the same future. And so I believe in being proud of your cultural identity, but it can't be translated into hating somebody else's.
Can I just ask about your pin? Is there any significance?
There is, you know. What happens if you look at the cover of the book, it's of me as a little girl. And so the publishers of the book had this pin made for me. So, and my name as a little girl was Mudlenka. So this is my new little Mudlenka. I think it's just they gave me this present. I just love it. It's so cute.
The second of our survey's winners would not have expected to be one of the most respected Czechs abroad just 10 years ago. His fantastic potential as a surgeon, though, was clear even then, as his colleagues say. Bohdan Pomahac has become one of the leading figures in the new field of face transplantation. It is really only since the advent of face transplantation, only in the last few years, that the general public has seen with their own eyes the devastation that a person can suffer to their face. When there was no treatment, such cases received no media attention. It's not that the frequency of accidents to the face has recently increased, as one could sense from the media, but that answers to such catastrophes are now here, thanks to scientists and a few singularly capable surgeons. After years leading a burn trauma center in Boston, Massachusetts, in 2009, Bohdan Pomahac led the team performing the 7th ever partial transplant on a man whose face had been destroyed after a fall onto an electrified subway rail. Last year, in 2011, he performed the 3rd ever full transplant on a benefactor who had been left essentially faceless, also due to a high-voltage accident. Equally amazing to the skill of Bohdan Pomahac, whose name incidentally means helper in Czech, is his perseverance. Having worked up to 120 hours a week and offering his services for free when he came to America in 1996 in order to gain experience. We had the pleasure of sitting down with him for the following interview. First of all, I'd like to ask, what exactly were the obstacles to doing a face transplant 15, 20 years ago? Why is it possible now?
Well, there are a number of obstacles, mostly ethical, surgical, technical, and logistical, and creating actual infrastructure to perform such a big undertaking. I think the ethical questions have been for probably decades a subject to people's imagination and criticism, as well as general positive attitude. So there have been swings in mood, sort of speaking, from very negative to very positive. But ultimately, somebody had to come and pretty much create the operation from the scratch, practice it, create it, and ultimately find the right patient to perform it on.
Well, if we talk about the ethical considerations, has the enormous success of these cases not wiped out a lot of the ethical complaints?
Definitely. We have actually recently wrote a review article looking at both frequency as well as the overall message of articles that dealt with ethical considerations, and from sometimes several hundreds through a period of time, it not only dropped, but generally has converted to purely positive reactions. So I think the concerns have been pretty much unsubstantiated, and there is no longer really any ethical concern in my mind.
And in terms of technical capabilities, what was impossible 20 years ago that's possible now? I mean, the face is a critical part of a person's identity, but it's also a toolbox of so many senses. And mm-hmm. how can one person or even a small team of people be able to know so much to be able to do that?
Well, first of all, the facial sort of recovery of tissue has to be performed in such a fashion so that you can reconnect it and reestablish blood flow. And what was not known, face is very well vascularized, and what was not known was how many vessels do you really need to keep it alive, how many nerves you would need to connect in order to not only maintain the blood supply but also provide the function and integrate it into one's functional face again. Face is so well vascularized that you could make the operation almost impossible due to the complexity of the blood supply if you would want to connect every single large vessel. And I think that's where our team contribution was. We have simplified the concept to probably what is the most efficient but also flexible design of recovery of the face that works very well for both full face as well as partial face transplant. So that's been sort of one aspect of it. Second is we always considered the function of the face so critical that the patient not only has living face that would function as a mask looking human again, but rather would provide sensation and motor function. And we have always integrated all the major nerves that provide motion, but also provide the feel, not only on the skin of the forehead, cheeks, but also inside in the mouth. So it's a completely reintegrated, just like your or my face are.
This face transplant must be incredibly more emotional than any other kind of transplant, I assume. How are you prepared for that? And is that difficult for you to deal with the huge emotions involved, or is it one of the things that keeps you interested in this work?
Well, I personally try as much as I can to stay detached emotionally and focus professionally on the task. I try to simplify it to performing surgical endeavor to do exactly as every step of the operation as planned. And I think it's better to keep any potential connection to the emotional side of the patient completely aside.
But is that really possible?
I think so. I think the focus during the operation has to be so much technical that you can't really think of other aspects of your own or patient's own life.
How did you decide, how did you reach the decision to work in this field?
Ever since I started residency in plastic surgery, I was fascinated by facial, both reanimation, reconstruction. And so when I started in my own practice, I had a large number of patients that I intentionally chose that had problems with head and neck reconstruction. And that's where I found the major limitations associated with conventional techniques of reconstruction. And pretty much became, over several years, very frustrated by how far we can really get, because we're still limited to transplanting or reconstructing patients' faces utilizing skin or tissues from other part of their own body, which doesn't resemble face, doesn't function like a face, doesn't have a texture or color as face. And so when the first face transplant was performed in France, and I have to give them full credit for really perfecting the operation from all sides, that really, I think, opened the door and silenced the critics and allowed me to build a program in the United States that has been quite successful.
What would you say about the state of experimental medicine in general in the Czech Republic?
No, I don't honestly know enough to be frank. I left the country right after I graduated from medical school, so my memories are connected with the state of medicine in 1996 and at the university level from angle of the medical student. So it's a very incomplete picture that's outdated. I think that ultimately the drivers of medical innovation are countries with a lot of resources to support research, and United States have been the leader, probably worldwide leader. But that may change, and who knows, maybe in 10 more years, China or Asia will become the leader. But I think it's because it is viewed as long-term investment and return on investment is fairly small. It has to come from countries with relative surplus.
Can you imagine a scenario under which you would return to the Czech Republic?
Right now, I think I'm in the best spot I could possibly be at the time of my career. Things are going well, and there's a lot of work that hasn't been finished. So right now, if I'm not forced, I would not change even within the United States or anywhere else in the world. But I can see that there may be opportunities or a proper time when I would consider returning home. Just don't quite know when and how it would happen.
Are you surprised, or what are your personal feelings about the fame that you've achieved through your work?
Well, I certainly didn't plan or even imagine that something like that would happen. It's it is, at least to say, surprising. But I guess people are inspired by someone from small nation being successful abroad and feel the pride, which I can understand. I felt the same way when I heard about very well and successful and well-known Czechs either living abroad or becoming known abroad. It's something that I take as it comes. I don't have an agent. I'm not trying to manage it extensively, but if there is a good reason, I'm happy to provide interviews or talk to people.
Lastly, would you donate your own face?
Definitely.
Without any hesitation or consideration?
Oh, I've been through that thought process before, absolutely. And actually, most of our, if not all, I remember we did a poll after our first face transplant. And I think all the surgeons that were involved in the first agreed to do the same.
Many of the people who were nominated for Czech Radio's distinction as the greatest Czech abroad are not well-known names. Fourth to seventh place are taken by Czechs who have made a tremendous impression and name internationally, namely Hollywood director Miloš Forman, who needs no introduction, Jaromír Jágr, considered one of the best hockey players of all time, or architectural wizard, commander of the Order of the British Empire, Eva Jiříčná, and of course, another name that needs no introduction, Milan Kundera, who has kept a relative distance from his country of birth. Wherever you follow the news, the name Bjela Granjensen may not ring a bell, but she is the person that Czechs themselves singled out as the most important countryman abroad in Czech radio survey, needless to say, for great merit. The organization Stonoška, or Centipede, which she founded in Norway after the fall of communism in her homeland, is about teaching children how they can lift up other children less advantaged than themselves. While Czech children were originally the beneficiaries of the program, through Centipede they are now raising money for children in war-torn and impoverished parts of the world. Bjela Granjensen tells us her story.
I was studying in the philosophical faculty in Prague, and after the occupation, you know, we were a group, so everybody was working with some journalists, because we were very naive and we were thinking that we might mobilize whole world to help us from the Russians. And so somebody was studying Italian and had contact with the Italian journalist and somebody with French, and nobody wanted to have a Scandinavian. So I said, okay, I'm going to study Norwegian, because nobody wanted to do it.
And all your life, I guess you've had this kind of can-do attitude that if you go somewhere and try to do something, then you can manage to.
Yes, I was very fortunate with education at home, with my education. And I mean, if you have to do something, you have to do something. I mean, I know the word must. If I must, so I must. That's it. And it really saved me many times in my life and helped me very much. And I'm very grateful to my parents that they taught me this.
I know you've told this story several times, especially over the last month, but would you mind telling me how Stonoška came about?
Well, that was not thanks to me. It was probably Lord's wish or destiny, whatever you want, but I was never ever planning to do it. I was always trying to help wherever I could help. But, you know, it doesn't matter actually where you are, whether you are in Australia or whether you are in Norway or whether you are in Greece, or you can always do something positive. So I was always helping, but it never ever crossed my mind that I should be running some movement. And since I was a political refugee, I was not allowed to, I mean, I could go back, but in that case I will not be here today because I will be in jail.
This is an interesting side note that your group of students were being followed by the
STD. We were very popular by them. No, without joking. I came back first time in 1990. And
after 22 years.
Yes, 21.
21 years.
And it was absolutely dreadful experience because I was living in Norway and there was a progress and everything was getting better and better. And when you came here, you had impression that everything stopped. You know, the corner which was there, I mean, those 21 years ago, it was there still when I came. The same shop, actually everything looked much more gray, much more damaged, and very, very sad. So I was very grateful that I was staying only 4 days because I think I will kill some communists. And when I was here first time, so came a nurse from a hospital, children's hospital, and asked me, I mean, she came with a kind of visit card. And there was written that orthopedic clinic and bank account number. And she asked me whether I could deal it in Norway and ask people that
hand
they
it
could.
Out to people on
yes,
the
yes,
street.
Yes, yes. And you know, I didn't think at all, so I said, of course I will do it. And then after flying home to Norway, I realized that I was absolutely foolish and stupid because in those days it was so complicated still to send money to Czech Republic, Czechoslovak in those days. So there was no one who could, even 1,000 Norwegian crowns, you wouldn't have time to stay there and discuss whether it should be sent via Chase Manhattan or Bank of Scotland or something like that. I said, well, okay, I have to do something since I promised. And the hospital looked dreadful. I mean, it was dreadful. It was primitive. And they were stealing some sand, you know, just to be able to stretch the child's leg. I mean, it was something absolutely unbelievable. I mean, children today would never, ever believe how centipede started. Because it was different world. And then I was thinking that I'm not very good in begging at all. And I do not believe in begging. I believe that you can help only if you teach. So actually Centipede or On Own Feet is educational movement that the children can learn in very early age that you can make a difference. It's all about it's you can make a difference. And at the same time, I was thinking, well, what am I going to do? So I asked the teachers whether they could make some paintings. I mean, the first were dreadful. Awful. I mean, there were some tractors on the field, you know, and factory with a lot of smoke coming out from the factory.
These were the pictures that the children were
yes,
drawing?
It couldn't be more socialistic and communistic motifs you can imagine. I mean, all the working class. But still, I mean, children painted, and I was standing in front of some shopping centers and selling those pictures, you know. And if I earned 3,500 Norwegian crowns during the whole day, I was very proud. But what was fantastic is that the Norwegian, which is absolutely a fabulous nation, and they are probably the most generous nation in the whole world, they realized that suddenly there is somebody who is not begging, but trying to get something to help the less fortunate children. So.
And this began with just you alone?
Me alone, standing there in 20 degrees below zero, of course, in very nice fur coat and whatever, because you cannot live without fur coat in Norway, because you will die, okay? And boots, but okay, 20 degrees minus, it's really cold. And suddenly, the Norwegian noticed, so suddenly the people started to call me, the hospital started to call me. They were so impressed by the children, you know, trying to help the less fortunate ones. Well, and then I got from Pilsen, I got two fantastic paintings. And one was 8 years old child, and one was from 5 years old child, And they were with the Christmas decoration on it and Christmas tree and snowmen. And you know, I look at those two paintings and I was thinking, yeah, something is happening. Look at it. And one night, about 3 weeks later, about 3:30 in the morning, I got up and I said, Christmas cards. So we started to paint, the children started to paint the Christmas cards. And actually, what was also very interesting was when I was for first time flying back to Norway, it was June 11th, 1990, because I came the 7th of June. And when I decided in my head that the children are going to paint and I'm going to sell it, then my mind crossed an idea, a thought. And anyhow, this is going to be about something completely different. I mean, I didn't have a slightest idea what it would be about. It just crossed my mind. It will be another story, completely another story. And another story started in 2000, because there was war in Balkans, and children wrote to me that they would like so much help those children in war. And the only thing which I could imagine could help was an ambulance. So I asked the children to make some collections and make some exhibitions, some theaters, some concerts, and the money that we will buy an ambulance, one, okay? And the children manage for 4 ambulances. I mean, absolutely miracle. Then came the problem, how to get the ambulances to war countries. Yeah. So I had to go to the Czech army to contact them, but they could help me. And since then started the most fantastic cooperation with the army of the Czech Republic. Because, believe it or not, but the Czech soldiers are the most popular ones in those peacekeeping forces. They do a really fantastic job. And I heard about them in Norwegian, Royal Norwegian Ministry of Affairs. I was dining with the minister, with the secretary. So he told me, Bia, do you know that the Czech soldiers are the best ones? Because normally we Norwegians are best ones, just for your information. So I am very proud, and now the children know that they are making difference.
How many children have been on the receiving side of
thousands,
these programs?
Thousands. We have been on Balkans, we have been Kosovo, we have been in Bosnia.
Afghanistan,
Iraq. So we have done lot of good work. We have, of course, sent lot of equipments to different hospitals. We have been repairing schools, reconstructing schools. And the last, not least the last, so as you say, what is absolutely fantastic is that thanks to the Czech soldiers, the Afghan mothers are for the first time managing to write their names. So the children, we give the money to the soldiers, and they started courses, and now we have first about 35 Afghan mothers who can write and read. And now I got from the soldiers a lot of papers with the signature of those Afghan women. This is again education.
Charity organizer Bjella Gran-Jensen and one of the greatest Czechs abroad, ending that segment and Radio Prague's English broadcast for today. You can read or hear that program again on our website at radio.cz. And if you'd like to write in, we are always happy to hear from you. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, and all of us here at Radio Prague, goodbye.